This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good to have you with us here on In Focus. I'm Roger Gray, and it is good to welcome the superintendent of Tyler Independent School District, Marty Crawford. Dr. Marty Crawford, welcome. Good to have you here.
Roger, thanks for having me. Love coming to KTBB and talking about the great things that are happening in Tyler ISD with you.
Well, let's talk about it, and I confess, so I'm going to bring up some challenges you guys are all facing from the legislature and everything else. How are we looking so far? How is the new school year doing? Are the kids adapting to no cell phones?
You know, we're off to a good start. 19,000 students enrolled in Tyler ISD as of this year, and that's a growth over the last decade plus. When I first got here over a dozen years ago in Tyler ISD, we were around 17,800. Again, we're kissing 19,000, so I guess we're doing things well enough that mm-hmm. people are choosing the public education system here in Tyler. As for cell phones, it's been a pretty quiet start to that school year that's been impacted by the new state legislation that says that cell phones are banned from bell to bell, from the first part of instruction mm-hmm. to the last part of the day. Of course, students, just like anything else that you implement from the legislature, are going to be a little counterculture, and they're going to find ways to still access some of their cell phone, but they're certainly not on it during the classroom time, which is what's most important.
Because they're sharper at it than we are. There's no doubt about it. And being a man of a certain age and growing up before there were even cell phones, I'm frankly amazed they were ever in classrooms. It seems like an incredible distraction.
No doubt. I think there were good intentions whenever they became so prevalent mm-hmm. that you could potentially look at possibly using them as instructional tools. And we are a digital society. Mm-hmm. We know that. We're trying to certainly adapt to the native adapters that they are as far as technology goes. But I think it had gotten out of hand, especially with mm-hmm. the advent of social media and the text messaging. They weren't just used as an encyclopedia in your hand at all times mm-hmm. or a computer in your hand at all times to do the computations and maybe do the research that you needed. They'd actually become a distraction as far as students communicating with each other or getting on social media. Even though our campuses didn't have the best reception internally, mm-hmm. they were still finding ways to access their cell phones and using those for non-instructional purposes. I'm glad the legislation is there so that we can get back to the teaching and learning, the meat and potatoes of what we're supposed to be doing as far as public education goes. We were already looking at implementing that, and there were a lot of other school systems that looked at
oh, yeah, it was being done piecemeal all over the country.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And let's face it, social media has gotten almost irresistible. I forget the latest figure I saw of how many times a young person checks phone every day.
Yeah. And no doubt. These social media companies have R&D departments that are trying to figure out how to make these things more and more addictable mm-hmm. As we try to adapt to it, I'm sure there's going to be things down the road that we hadn't even thought of that we're going to mm-hmm. face as far as the challenges of social media and other technologies.
The worst word in the vocabulary right now is algorithm. That's what they use to keep you hooked.
And sure enough, they've programmed these things to where the computers can think for themselves all the time, certainly faster than any human can. So mm-hmm. there's some AI platform out there that's trying to figure this all out to combat some of the policies that we have in place now, no doubt.
Your last rating, I believe, was a B. How'd you feel about that?
You know, pretty good. It shows
state rating we're talking about.
Yeah, it shows continuous improvement. We knew back in, 2023 that when mm-hmm. the state reset all the standards, I think somebody down at the agency down in Austin said that C is the new B. Of course, whenever they switched it over, we were at an 88. And so it knocked everybody backwards, and everybody's trying to catch back up to that same rating they have, if not more. We think we're going to have another good school year this year, and then there's one more year before they reset the whole dang thing again. Our preparation is that when they reset it again, that we're not going to slip back to a C, but maintain our B or A rating once we get there.
Okay. Areas where you think think we need to improve here?
You know, I do think there's some opportunities for some reform in some of our schools. You know, it sure does beat a dozen years ago or 13 years ago where we had most of our elementary schools were in improvement required. We had 13 low-performing schools. This last year, we had two campuses that were rated at D. So certainly some of those hot spots that we have, making sure that we do some instructional systems improvement there is something we're working on this year, and maybe some future reform efforts in some of those schools to get those campuses stabilized, because really those campuses are what's preventing us from even thinking about being an A-rated school system. We've got a system-wide pockets of excellence, and we just need to make sure we get a system of excellence in place. And I think those are some areas that we can potentially focus on. You know, seventh grade mathematics is certainly something that we have really targeted and identified. It's not just a Tyler issue. It is a statewide issue.
Is that a problem year?
It is. It is. And certainly closing achievement gaps is something we didn't create, and it's something we're making progress to. We're just not doing it fast enough. And again, it's not just a Tyler issue. It is a nationwide issue. It's a state issue. And if we could figure out how to close those achievement gaps, Roger, you and I would make a lot of money being able to can that curriculum to say that this closes the achievement gap. So, but there's a lot of factors. I can say that the school system internally is doing the things that the best practices that we can do. We certainly need all of our community to be behind us and being able to do that, working with us around the dinner table when the kids are not in our our stead.
I'm originally from Houston and have been doing this since dinosaurs were on the earth. I recall an interview with Joan Raymond, who was the HISD superintendent back in the late 80s. And I forget what the big issues of the day were, but she said, for some reason, whatever the societal or social or political winds, whichever way they're blowing, they take all of those problems and dump them on the schoolhouse front step and say, you guys fix it. You guys fix our kids. There's a lot. I look at stuff, the DEI stuff, the Ten Commandments stuff, parental control over library material, a lot of new stuff that is the current thinking politically. And you guys have to adapt to that.
Absolutely. You know, I have great relationships with our local legislators here, including Congressman Moran, but specifically at the local level with Daniel Alders, our state rep, formerly Matt Schaefer, our state rep, and then our state senator and Brian Hughes. And I've talked to them. That there's no doubt that there's a lot of societal, cultural pressures on our schools.
Political pressures. Let's be honest. Yeah.
Absolutely. But even internally, Roger, we've got to get back to that wholesome moral feeling that we've always had inside of schools. And because of some influences, some of those external pressures, like we've discussed, social media.
Sure.
The way that our movies and our music, it's always been an issue, but it just seems now that it's more and more attacking and helping in the decay of the central fabric of our country, that we really needed some help. And some of the legislation that, if they were serious about it, instead of using schools as a punching bag for political gain, if it truly were...
Which happens far too often.
It does. Yeah. If they were serious about it, would there be some legislation coming up in this last session to maybe start getting us back towards recovering our moral compass? And I can say that some of that has done it. The posting of the Ten Commandments, and while not, it might not be everybody's cup of tea, let's be honest that those commandments are pretty good guidance on how to treat other people. Thou shalt not kill is a pretty common practice amongst all religions, and it's probably good for us to
in every culture,
absolutely, to put those out there for a reminder every day. So I don't have as much of an issue with that as maybe some others do, but there's no doubt that the tennis ball. We are the tennis ball, and we are getting batted back and forth between the political ideologies that are out there. So it's refreshing, but at the same time, it is difficult to kind of be so reactive to what the political whims are right now.
Well, if you think about all of the things, both of my grandparents were teachers, and she was a teacher during the Little Rock integration situation. So, I mean, they've seen the social push and pull in the classroom. But today, I mean, it's how do you teach history? How do you teach social studies? All of the – it has to, for what, $52,000 a year, has to be pretty tough to be a teacher these days.
It is. It's a calling.
Yeah.
And I really do admire the folks that choose education as a profession.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were both educators as well.
Yeah.
In Gilmer, Texas, both making $3,000 a year back in, back in the late 50s and early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the cost of a dollar now, it doesn't stretch quite as far probably as it did back then. And so being able to have a mortgage and maybe even a car payment, maybe even put your kids through school, you've got to figure out creative ways to do that. And I really do admire teachers for having a family and then choosing education as a profession. But being able to have to contend with all of this stuff, I guarantee you teachers, when it's all said and done, just want to be able to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that we're being asked to do and some things we're being able to monitor is a stretch for them. But I will say this, Roger.
Yeah.
Not in Tyler, Texas, maybe to a little bit of an extent, but nationwide, even in some of our urban centers in the state, we have had some things that have been self-inflicted.
Mm-hmm.
And having to course correct for some of those sins, as you would, as you'd like to maybe not you, but you might want to talk about, we're having to course correct for that and get back to the meat and potatoes, the X's and O's of teaching and learning, as opposed to trying to do all these things that are so culturally popular right now.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you brought up DEI along with some of the other things that came out of that. There are other ways to contend with that. And you know what? A school system, a public school system that is now integrated a couple, three generations away, 50-plus years here in Tyler, Texas, is part of the equity that we're all seeking. And then trying to go the extra step on the DEI stuff is just not what we needed, because we're already doing a lot of the work as far as equity goes, because all kids have access to the good stuff. That's our goal every day, is to make sure all of our students have access to the great curriculum that's out there, that's adopted by Tyler and the state of Texas, and making sure that everyone has an access to the opportunity of a quality public education.
How do you feel? They instituted a voucher program this year. And again, this is at a time. I mentioned the average salary. Is that pretty close, 52?
That's right. That's
Yeah. And one might think, well, if you're in a big district like Dallas or Houston teacher makes about 57 on average. It's a garbage driver in Houston makes 60.
Oh, wow.
So it has to, if you're a teacher, it has to be indicative of the worth your profession is given by your surrounding community. Do you hear that at all? And does it help you, hurt you in recruiting and that sort of thing?
You know, I think Tyler's a little bit different.
Okay.
The quality of life that we have here, the people that have here, our students.
Oh, I couldn't live in Houston now.
Our students and their behavior, they do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it. It's about the people you work around and with. And so I think that you hear a little bit about that, obviously. But, you know, getting caught up in some of the ilk of the urban the urbanisms and things that are going on in large, much larger school systems.
Mm-hmm.
And I do admire them as well. I used to work in Dallas ISD. So.
Yeah.
I know the great things that are happening there and the teachers choosing to work in those school systems.
And the challenges,
And the challenges. I do admire them, and I don't hear much of that. But, you know, as it pertains to the vouchers that have come on board, I think the thing that concerns us most is what's the growth going to look like of a government program? And that's what this voucher program is.
And everywhere it's tried, it has grown. The budget has grown.
That's right. That's right.
And it comes out of tax money.
And that's eligible tax money, not just for public, that could be considered for public schools later on, but other state-supported systems and programs that are there. So I would be concerned about that, the future of public education and what the impact of the budget's going to be. As far as being able to compete, Mm-hmm. We've got to compete. Private schools have been around now since integration began, mm-hmm. and that's kind of how they started. So if we'll just continue to compete, we will be okay in Tyler ISD. Obviously, it's a new challenge with them actually, the state actually funding this opportunity now. But, you know, as far as Tyler goes, and that's what we're really worried about here on this mm-hmm. On this talk today is, you know, we already have the private schools in town. We already have the charter schools in town. We also have the homeschooling in town. And we share students. They're back and forth with us. We share teacher staff. They're back and forth with us. We share parents. They're back and forth with us. Mm-hmm. We worship with them. We grocery shop with them. We socialize with them. So how does Tyler ISD compete in that market, continue to provide quality education, quality college preparation, which I've got data that says an 85% of the advanced placement courses that we compete against our private, charter, and other public schools, mm-hmm. we're outperforming them as far as passing rates go. So in saying that, continue to compete there, continue to offer a quality of life, a student life that we're offering with the extracurricular activities. Mm-hmm. The community's provided great facilities for us.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing, do things right and do things well. You know, one bad actor inside of a classroom, a discipline problem, should not impact the other opportunities or the other 22 kids in class. Sure. So I can say that Tyler ISD has not always felt that way. It was always one of these deals of we were afraid about some report that we were going to get back because of discipline. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, we expect all of our kids to act appropriately. Mm-hmm. And what is school appropriate may not always be home appropriate. Mm-hmm. But when you come to Tyler ISD schools, we're going to have a safe and secure setting for all kids to learn.
You set an expectation.
Absolutely. So, that's how
you're pretty good about meeting it if they do.
Right. And that's how you combat the vouchers, is to make sure that you're competing in the educational market space that you occupy here in Tyler. And that's what we've been able to do over the last decade or so. And I think there's been some enhanced improvements, and we must be doing something right again. We're 19,000 students here in 2025. And I think everybody might have predicted we'd have been going backwards in enrollment like some of our peer districts across the state are experiencing.
Oh, Texas has lost, let me see, since, 20% of its teachers in the last decade while the population's grown.
Yeah. Population's grown, but public school enrollment has actually declined. So, but there is a crisis in front of us, and that is how many folks are choosing this profession. Mm-hmm. We've got a great partner here at UT Tyler that's I think, going to start some, and I'm going to let them talk about that possibly down the road, some innovative practices with the largest school system in East Texas. That's Tyler ISD. We're looking forward to that because they realize and see a need for certified teachers in public education to fill up these vacancies that are near us. I mean, you think about this. Mm-hmm. The last part of the boomer generation is retiring. The early part.
You're looking at one of them.
The early part of the Gen X generation is starting to retire as well. That's me. I can actually retire here pretty soon within the teacher retirement system. So you've got that confluence of both of those large groups of people that chose public education to teach in are about to start retiring.
Right.
And we've got to do something, and we are doing some things to make this a little bit more attractive. And one thing is we got to, when we speak of public education, speak of teachers, we've got to speak well about the great things that they are doing, the challenges that they do have to experience every day. And, there's compensation that needs to be considered down the road, and that's where those vouchers are kind of coming into play, that's money that could be dedicated towards teacher pay.
Well, and that's and I'm terribly afraid. I, for some reason, it's very popular sometimes to compare U.S. public education with school systems around the world. Nobody else, everybody else has a good, healthy public school system. They don't do it with things like vouchers and private schools. You have to be very wealthy in Europe to go to a private school. And frankly, it doesn't hurt here either. A $10,000 voucher, forgive me, I did a Substack piece on this. A $10,000 school voucher here won't get you into All Saints.
Yeah.
It's 20 grand a year. I was looking at figures from my hometown in Houston. Episcopal High School costs $31,000 a year. That's more than a semester, than a year at the University of Houston. Yeah. So basically, some people are paying for it twice. 10 grand is not going to get you there.
Yeah, that's a coupon.
And I'm afraid people have been
Yeah, it's a coupon. It's a discount. And let's remember that every 2 years the legislature meets, and if early on this is a popular program, they may have some future considerations about upping the ante on that, and maybe that voucher turns into, instead of a 10 grand voucher, it gets you into a 20 grand voucher, and you're two-thirds of the way there in Houston or in Dallas at a St. Mark's or an Ursuline or a Hockaday or somewhere. But in Tyler, it would take care of the full cost of tuition possibly. So,
And those are wonderful schools,
great
schools. But people are expecting, I'm afraid, miracles.
Yeah, miracles. And then there's some restrictions, some guardrails, constraints that have been put in the voucher program. They may loosen those constraints. Mm-hmm. They may tighten those constraints. The camel has got their nose under the tent, and we'll see how that happens. Mm-hmm. Of course, that also goes into whether or not these private schools and homeschools want the government inside of their education.
That's
system.
The other part of it is they don't have to meet the same restrictions you guys do.
Yeah.
If you're a disabled kid, whatever. They don't have to take it.
Yeah. And other side, other than the tax question that everyone's paying taxes, there is an argument there that, well, at least I'm getting some of my tax dollars back for what I'm putting into the system. I've talked to quite a few parents. I've talked to some homeschool parents that they don't want the government's money. That's the way they see it. They're okay with providing that for the greater good for the public education system to operate. But when they start talking about the education of their students or even taking the money to educate their students, they have some concerns there. Mm-hmm. And these are people that we go to church with. These are people that we socialize with and go grocery shopping with or go to the mall with. They like what they have now. And they're concerned and they're skeptical about maybe some intrusion there.
There can't be a better investment, really, than a good public school system. I mean, let's face it, if people are getting ready to retire, these are the kids that are going to be running Social Security somewhere down the road. The kids that are going to be running for office and representing you. You want the best education you can give them.
No doubt. And let's talk about the Texas economy. Mm-hmm. I don't know what our GDP is, but it ranks up there in the top 20 in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Only surpassed by California, because
California
is larger than we are.
If California were a country, it'd be like the fourth best economy in the world.
So Texas is in the top 10 or top 15, wherever that's at this year, whenever they do the ratings.
Oh, yeah.
You get there not just because you've got a lot of folks that are CEOs of these large companies. There's got to be a workforce. Mm-hmm. And the driver of that workforce is your public education system. Mm-hmm. At least that's the American model, because we do it outside of maybe what China does or somewhere else does, where they do a lot of labor that is indentured.
Sure.
Here, we actually have quality public education that produces a lot of quality workers for our workforce that drives the economy. It is the engine of the Texas economy. Let's make no mistake about that. And so being able to invest in that workforce through the public education system will continue to keep the Texas exceptionalism and Texas miracle what it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that we will continue to recognize that, and that we'll get over this little era of saying things about the public education system that they don't need to be said. We need to lift ourselves up as opposed to try to tearing it down.
I don't get that tendency, to be quite honest with you. Like I said, other countries that we keep saying do it better are doing the same basic thing. They have good public education system. It's like complaining about the post office.
Yeah.
Our postal system is better than most of theirs.
Yeah.
So it's rather self-defeating. And as I said, a lot of these voucher programs in other states are not producing better educational results.
Yeah, no doubt.
So they're not going to get miracles out of this.
Yeah. China just built the largest bridge in history over some gorge or something, some canyon. Yeah, I bet they didn't do it with workers that chose to build the bridge.
Well, probably not.
Something about democracy in all of that, and this republic that we live in, and that the public education that we do have, the system that we do have, has contributed to what is the greatest country that's ever been on the face of this earth, especially the one that you can live in the freedoms that we do enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason for that. But I think we're a big part of that as far as public education goes. And I'm not I'm not saying that the charter system or maybe even that the private systems don't have a large part in that, but when you've got 5.5 public education students in the state of Texas that are entering into the workforce and that we're enjoying all of the economic benefits mm-hmm. that we have here in Texas, there's an engine for that, and that is our kiddos that we're pumping out and getting the experiences here inside of our public ed system.
Now, the part you can't control, obviously, is where they go after that. Have you paid off your student loans yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm done.
Okay.
Now, I've got my own kids we're having to worry about, and certainly tuition costs that are skyrocketing, mm-hmm. and the adaptation.
I'm old enough that I didn't have any because it was affordable back then.
That's right.
My dad was an electrical engineer, and he could afford college.
The adaptation of how quickly employment is changing and the types of jobs that are out there mm-hmm. does concern me, because we were telling all kids to go to college.
Right.
Now we're starting to see the advent of our Career Technology Center that's pumping mm-hmm. out workforce credentialing and apprenticeships like they never have before.
Yeah.
And that's a big focus of ours in Tyler ISD and across Texas, that we need to have kids that are college ready, mm-hmm. but maybe they don't go to college. Maybe they become electricians. Maybe they become plumbers. Maybe they become expert in the manual trade.
Auto tech, whatever.
Absolutely. And then who knows?
It's a great auto tech school, by the way.
You wind up doing all that work and then maybe owning your own plumbing company one day or Stewart's Donnybrook Automotive up the road or something like that. I mean, there are careers out there that don't require a college mm-hmm. degree. And you know, I used to talk to Mayor Hines about this, and he used to tell me that the average age of a plumber in the city of Tyler, and of course, he hadn't been mayor since, 6 years ago, mm-hmm. was 68 years old. And so
how long are they going to want to hunker over here?
Exactly right.
Sink,
yeah. So being able to do some cool things at our Career Technology Center, Representative Matt Schaefer got some legislation across before he actually left the legislature mm-hmm. that kind of circumvented some of the apprenticeship requirements that were needed for upcoming plumbers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we now have kids that are actually graduating with some of those credentials as far as being an electrician or a plumber
mm-hmm.
That I think is going to help maybe patch some of the things locally that we need, because we have some of these folks that are aging out of work.
Look, I'm an early boomer, so yeah, I know what you're talking about. Years ago, Texas Monthly did a graph of two kids graduating high school. One went to college and then law school. The other became a plumber's apprentice. Their collective incomes didn't cross until they were in like early 40s.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got the cost of law school, you got all of that and so forth. In the meantime, the plumber's apprentice is moving on up the ladder. So it can be a way to go.
Yeah, talk to Dr. Philly over at UT Tyler, who has her MD,
mm-hmm.
and what she had to pay early and often as far as going to medical school versus being able to make a livable wage coming out. And so I think it all probably shakes out in the end. It's just really what are the industries that are out there? What are the jobs that are going to be needed that we don't even know about now? What are the ones that are going to become obsolete? And if mm-hmm. we're trying to tell every kid that they've got to go to college, we need to be coaching them on which degrees matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe an art education major. We love them, but where are you going to wind up fitting in? Hopefully, you're going to go ahead and maybe choose public education to be an art teacher. But if you know arts education majors and things like that, maybe are not as popular as they once were because the cost of living is just driving you out of wanting that degree. Not to say that those degrees are not fun and exciting, and that we don't need more artisans out there. But mm-hmm. at the same time, what is the degree going to accomplish if you go there?
Yeah, you're talking to the father of a drama graduate. So, yes, I know what you're talking about. She's still on the family payroll.
Yeah.
We've only got a minute or so left here. Where are we heading? Obviously, it sounds like, given career options and changes in society, you guys have to be continually adaptable.
We always have accountability on our at the front of what we do. You know, again, we go back 13 years ago or 12 years ago, we had 13 low-performing schools. We don't ever want to get back to that point. So mm-hmm. we need to be able to compete and make sure we have systems in place that takes care of the local accountability or the state accountability, because it does impact you. The layman, the normal Tylerite that's out there,
mm-hmm.
When they see a headline that says you're just an 81, they say, well, gosh, they're not an A. Well, it takes a lot of mm-hmm. at-bats and a lot of base hits that goes into that data to become a 300 Hall of Fame batting hitter.
Yeah.
We're doing pretty well. You know, 80% economically disadvantaged at an 81 right right now that's we're trending up is something that I think is going to be exciting for the community. But our theme this year is Next Is Now. What is Tyler ISD going to do right now and in the next 10 years to set Tyler up for success? Because they're coming. The state of Texas is coming this way. 85% of those kids that have grown in the last 2 years came from other public school systems inside of Texas. So of the 750 kids, what, 650 of them were from other public education systems inside of the state of Texas, not in East Texas. So they're coming this way. Tyler's growing, and we need to make sure we're set up and contributing to the workforce for the next 50 years.
All right. Dr. Marty Crawford, thank you. Good luck.
All right, Roger. Thank you, man.
In the case of public education, I mean it. Good luck.
Thank you. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You, guys. We appreciate it, and we will see you next week.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, and we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.